Action follows.
I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Connection. On September 4th, the American Civil Liberties Union got a new leader. 1 week later, on September 11th, the ACLU got a new mission. On paper, Anthony Romero's job as president of the 80-year-old Civil Liberties Organization seems straightforward. Defend people's rights. Who could argue with that? But argue they do. The ACLU is both revered and reviled. Celebrated for its principles and attacked on many fronts for its practices. It was founded in 1920 in response to a massive law enforcement sweep of immigrants and others suspected in a series of anarchist bombings. Sound familiar? The ACLU's CV includes defending John Scope's right to teach the theory of evolution, denouncing the internment of Japanese Americans during World War II. It also fought for the right of Nazis to march through a Jewish neighborhood in Skokie, Illinois. And it defended Oliver North's right not to incriminate himself during the Iran-Contra hearings. So, Connection listeners, what is the ACLU to you? A defender of individual freedoms or a vast left-wing conspiracy? And how should the ACLU fight for freedom in the midst of America's fight against terror? Our telephone number is 1-800-423-8255. 1-800-423-TALK. You can, of course, join us online at our website at theconnection.org. My guest this hour is Anthony Romero. He's executive director of the ACLU. He joins us from a studio in New York. Hello.
Good morning, Dick. How are you today?
I'm fine, thanks. Take me back to September 11th. You were preparing to give your first major speech to a room full of donors to the ACLU. Someone comes in, says, you need to step outside and look at this picture on television. Mm-hmm. Before we talk about your reaction to what you saw, what was in the speech? What were you planning to say first?
It was an optimistic speech. It was the first time I was being introduced to this group of donors. And so after my appointment in April, I was coming to them with a vision, with a plan for where the organization needed to go and what we were going to do to get there. And so I was going to hit a very optimistic note. I was going to congratulate them that much of the success that we've seen in this country over the last 80 years has been as a result of the work of the American Civil Liberties Union and other civil rights and civil liberties groups.
Can you distill that mission, Anthony, into one point that you wanted to make?
That every person has certain inalienable civil liberties and civil rights, that they attend to us because of our basic humanity, and that those rights attend to you regardless of race, ethnicity, age, sexual orientation, political ideology, and that is our core mission, to safeguard the civil liberties and civil rights of everybody.
Now, that's the same thing Roger Baldwin was saying back in the 20s, right?
That's right. Go
ahead.
When you said that when I arrived on September 11th, we had a new mission, that's in fact not true. In fact, the mission I inherited on that September morning in Washington, D.C., was exactly the core mission that Baldwin and his colleagues founded for the organization. When, as you mentioned, after the Palmer raids, when you had 6,000 individuals who were rounded up by law enforcement authorities, the series of politically motivated bombings that you mentioned, one even at the home of then-Attorney General Mitchell Palmer, and you saw a fear and hysteria that swept the nation. Americans were all concerned about collapsing law and order, and they wanted government to do something about it.
I'll take your point on the mission being the same, but the priorities changed. You weren't concentrating as much in October on prisoners' rights. You weren't concentrating as much on some of the issues that were in the speech as you were forced to by the changes in legislation that were being passed in Washington, right?
Right. But the trick is, Dick, that in fact I don't have the luxury of putting those other issues on the back burner. I still have people sitting on death row. I still have people whose voting rights have been violated and who haven't been fully given the right to franchise in this country. I still have inequality that pertains to lesbians and gays and immigrants and people of color in this country. And just because what happened on September 11th doesn't give me the luxury, the opportunity to say that those issues no longer matter. My attorneys still have cases and clients and issues that they continue to have to labor on. The challenge of September 11th is that in addition to that already burgeoning docket, I had to add in an entirely new crisis, a crisis of fear and of war footing that could undercut not just the work on civil liberties generally, but about the work in all these different areas.
Has it been hard for you to raise the money that you need to do all this work?
Well, it's certainly been a challenge to make sure you strike the right balance. I mean, we begin with the premise that we have to keep America safe and free. That's the American way.
And nobody argues with that, right?
Right, right. And when we ask government to do everything it can to protect its citizens, we should also ensure that we don't let government use it as an excuse to do whatever it wants. And right now, my largest concern is the fact that the government is blurring this line between doing justice and making war.
Let's talk about the way that people appear to be responding, because if I look at public opinion polls supporting the president, supporting the administration, I could extrapolate to say that 75-80% of the people in the country support what the government is doing, and some of what the government is doing is what you're criticizing, an abrogation of certain rights and freedoms. So what do you say to those people who say, Anthony Romero, I like your ideas, but right now, frankly, I'd sooner worry a little bit more about safety and the issues that the president's talking about?
You know, actually, I read some of those same polls, Dick, and maybe it's because I'm the eternal optimist, but I walk away much more optimistic than what is painted in the larger press. I was, for instance, very pleased by the recent poll that came out by the New York Times that showed that Americans were as concerned that the government was doing too little to combat terrorism as it was about doing too much to restrict liberty. That Americans were showing in those series of questions a concern about the balancing between security and civil liberties. That Americans are asking themselves those core questions. I walk away feeling encouraged. I walk away feeling encouraged when I also look at my membership. That since September 11th, I have seen a surge in membership, almost 16%. And that's been at a very challenging time when my membership drive had to be recast entirely in the context of the terrorist attacks of September 11th. And so I actually think that the nation's elected officials and our political leaders may misjudge the American sentiment, may misjudge the fact that Americans are feeling fearful and anxious for their safety. They have a right to be fearful and anxious about their safety. They have a right to demand that government take actions to protect us. But at the same time, the same group of people, that same larger population, is as concerned about holding on to the core values and the core freedoms that make this country great.
Connection listeners, go ahead.
And when you think about the fact of what is terrorism, you define the word terrorism. You know, terrorism is not just meant to destroy and to kill. Terrorism is meant to intimidate. It's meant to intimidate a people, to force a people to do something that's not in their best interest. And I think when the American people think about the fact that if you give up your core freedoms and your core liberties, and if you're intimidated to the point of changing the content and character of your democracy, the terrorists will have won.
Our telephone number is 1-800-423-8255. My guest is Anthony Romero, he's the new executive director of the American Civil Liberties Union. If you have questions or comments for him, 1-800-423-8255. I want to go back a little bit to learn a bit about you. You were raised in the Bronx, is that right?
Raised in the Bronx and then moved out to New Jersey afterwards, yes.
And the son of parents from Puerto Rico?
From Puerto Rico. Good people who came from Puerto Rico in search of a better life. Immigrants.
What was it like for you? Did you have an easy time as a kid? Was it tough for you?
I had a great family. I had a loving mother, a loving father. Always made me feel that I could aspire to be what I wanted to be. I was the first in my family to finish high school and then to go on to college and law school. But they always gave me a sense of optimism, that this was a great country and that if you worked hard and you did everything you could achieve what you wanted. In the larger community around me, I saw much. You know, I grew up in the Bronx, and at one point in the 70s, when you saw crime, when you saw drugs, it was not an easy experience seeing what was, you know, grappling the larger community and some of my family members. And so it was those experiences that I remember very acutely, between having a family that loved and supported you, that made you feel that you could do everything you wanted to, while at the same time seeing some larger problems and contexts around you that made you realize that the world wasn't perfect.
See, I was thinking about you when I was reading some of the ACLU history last night, 1993, when the Chicago police were sweeping through the the housing areas there, and people were saying, thank goodness the police are here. Thank goodness somebody's controlling the drug dealers. Thank goodness somebody's making it safe for me to walk up the steps to my apartment. The ACLU was being reviled at the time for saying the police should not be there, even though it sounded like the people wanted them. And so when you bring your own memories of childhood, your own history to the organization like the ACLU, do you also bring some of the contradictions which are a part of the organization, that there isn't just one right way and one wrong way, that sometimes it's rights versus rights?
Right. And that's the toughest part of this work. But that's the business of democracy. Democracy is about sorting out clashing set of rights, to sort out when one right is in conflict with the other. And that's what we're about, Dick. I mean, the ACLU is an organization that has taken very important stances, sometimes positions that I have to explain to my very own family members. But at the end, when you peel back the facts, when you peel back the issues, and you look at the core principles that were at stake, I think you find a consistency that we're very proud of.
Okay.
We've
got David joining us on the line now. David, go ahead.
Hi, it's David. Yeah. I have an observation today. It's not really a question, and it's I'm an attorney. I tend to view myself as a conservative, but I've always appreciated the ACLU because I appreciate the fact that, to the degree that they are viewed as extreme on the liberal side, if you will, I appreciate that, because for me, having someone always on the, I guess, if you will, the extreme, I mean, I don't necessarily view the ACLU as extreme, but having somebody who's on the other side, and if far on the other side, it's fine, because it helps protect me from myself, helps others of my similar ideology protect me from going too far. When I see the country now, as you were noting earlier, Dick, about being 80% in favor of all the sweeping changes, which in fact scare me, it makes me realize I'm glad to have someone out there who's saying, whoa, let's put on some brakes, maybe pull us more toward a centrist, which I tend to typically view as being the best place to be.
But you see the ACLU as coming at this from a left-wing perspective, David?
Left is a hard, because, I mean, to the degree that you begin to characterize the protection of constitutional freedoms as leftist, that's scary for me as well. But I think if you tended to look toward where most people view the ACLU, and maybe it's not just the ACLU, it's the ACLU, and you can look at other what conservatives would view as left-wing organizations, then I think it's good to be there.
David, thanks.
Thank you, David. Thank you, David. I very much appreciate your comments. And if you leave me your phone number at my office, I'll make sure I send you a membership form. But just to underscore one point, I mean, one thing I am very committed to is that this is an organization for everybody. And that includes people across the political spectrum. I have been very clear in my speeches to talk about the need to transcend some of these increasingly outmoded ideologies. Democrat, Republican, liberal, conservative.
Connection,
so I'm
listeners,
very committed.
Anthony Romero says it's an organization for everybody, but is it seen that way now? And if it's not, why not? We're interested in hearing from you. 1-800-423-8255 is our number. We're talking about the image of the ACLU at this particular time in America's history. So please call us if you're interested. My name's Dick Gordon. This is The Connection on NPR. You're listening to The Connection on National Public Radio. My name's Dick Gordon. My guest this hour, Anthony Romero, the new executive director of the American Civil Liberties Union. And one of the things that Mr. Romero has talked about is internationalizing the work of the ACLU. There is in there was a letter written last month by your organization saying We are particularly interested in highlighting instances of abuse by our government and in developing systematic litigation to challenge its unconstitutional practices. And the letter was being sent to foreign embassies and consulates. Is that sort of what you mean?
Well, that's a part of it. The reason why we sent that letter to the consulates and the embassies was because we hit a stone wall with our own government. We had been endeavoring for the last several months to get more information from the U.S. government. Just basic information. How many people have been detained? What are the charges being brought against them? Have they had access to lawyers? Have they had access to their family members? What are the conditions of confinement? And we got nothing but a stone wall in response.
So the Bill of Rights that you're talking about, the rights that you want to protect, do those apply every bit as much to the students, the immigrants, the non-citizens of the United States who are being held as the people who are citizens in the country?
The Due Process Clause of the U.S. Constitution has the word persons. That includes everybody. It doesn't say citizens, doesn't say men or women, it says persons.
What about the Taliban fighters who are being shipped into Guantanamo Bay today?
Well, those represent different legal issues because of where they were apprehended. They were combatants. They're not individuals on American soil, per se, so they raise a different set of legal issues in terms of what rights they're entitled to. For me, I begin with the core premise. When you give government as sweeping a set of powers as we have, the sweeping set of law enforcement and security powers that we have...
You mean in the last few months or just in general?
In the last few months, right. Especially in the last few months. You want to make sure you keep an effective check and balance on that power, because without a check or a balance, it leads to abuse. And so in all of our efforts, we've been saying that one of the most important checks would be sunshine. Let the American people see what's going on. Give them the information to ensure that due process of law and that civil liberties are alive and well. And a second important balance, then, are our courts. Because our courts are the ones who really have been charged with making sure that the other branches of government don't overstep their boundaries and abuse their power.
So you get someone like John Walker, the young kid from California who is fighting for the Taliban. In your view, he has all the same rights as American soldiers fighting for this country?
He is an American citizen, and he is to be treated as someone who has certain rights. And we'll let the legal system evolve as it must in terms of grappling with whether or not someone is guilty of a particular crime. My greatest concern right now are the individuals who are in detention. We have over 400, 500 immigrants who have been detained since September 11th. There has been this pall of secrecy placed around their status and around their cases. So we know virtually nothing about them. The government has not given us the names of the individuals, their family members, their lawyers, whatnot. That's why we filed the Freedom of Information Act lawsuit.
See, these are really big issues, and they're really important. People are paying close attention. But then the ACLU in Northern California will, demand that an elementary school take the words "God bless America" down after September 11th. And people say, what are you wasting your time on that for?
And they make a good point. In the scheme of things, I have to tell you, Dick, that probably is not a top priority for me. It has an important principle behind it. Everything we do take as a stand is an important principle stand. But in the scheme of things, we have other very important issues that we have to attend to.
All right. We've got Faris joining us on the line from Boston. Hi, Faris.
Hi. How you doing?
Good, thanks.
I just want to first say thank you for defining terrorism for me. Certainly, I've been asking for that on this show a couple of times. And if I understand Mr. Romero correctly, define terrorism as an act of intimidating a people into something they don't want to do. Having defined that, I'm concerned. I'm an immigrant. I came from Pakistan. I was 17 when I got here. And I tell my wife, beware. They could come and pick us up at any time. Call the ACLU if that happens. The fact is the government is on a witch hunt, and what is the ACLU, or if anybody can do to try to define this whole thing of terrorism so they can't detain people, they can't do all the things that they are doing right now?
Anthony?
Yeah, well, I very much appreciate the fact of what you're feeling. And the fear that you're experiencing is one that I'm hearing from hundreds of clients and individuals across this country. What the ACLU is doing, we're doing a lot. This is our top priority at the moment. When we sent the letters out to the embassies and the consulates, we were trying to get information on the individuals who are in detention. We're getting that information to ensure that we can help protect their basic civil liberties and basic rights. the vast majority of those hundreds of individuals had nothing to do with the terrorist attacks of September 11th. And yet they're being treated poorly and differently as opposed to other immigration proceedings, merely because of timing and circumstances. So that's one. The recent witch hunt of the 5,000 individuals, the dragnet interrogations of men of Middle Eastern origin who are being brought in for quote-unquote voluntary questioning also concerns us. We feel that it's an uneven playing field, that individuals who are not apprised of their rights won't know how to engage the government in those discussions that may have enormous repercussions for their immigration status longer term.
But what about the people who may have been involved and who may, you know, not be speaking honestly to the interrogators, the people who should be held to prevent a repetition?
Well, and I think I take here the words of William Webster, former head of the FBI, who says that we have good law enforcement techniques already that allow us to fully and completely prosecute those individuals who are terrorists. And we have good law enforcement techniques that will give us the information we need to go after the individuals who are responsible and to make sure that such an attack never happens again.
Okay. Faraz, thank you for your call. Our number is 1-800-423-8255. Anthony Romero is my guest. He's executive director of the ACLU. We're going to Pinehurst, North Carolina. Jay, you're on The Connection.
Hi, how are y'all?
Hi, Jay. Thanks for calling.
Hey, thanks for taking my call. Great show, and I enjoy listening quite a bit. My question is for Mr. Romero, and since the ACLU has been an organization that has defended the rights laid out in the Constitution and the Bill of Rights, I was just curious what the ACLU's position is on the Second Amendment. Is it more of a pro-gun owner rights, or is it more in line with gun control groups? And I'll take my questions off the air.
Thanks, Jay.
Thank you.
Great. Thank you, Jay. And thanks for your support on our work on civil liberties. And we take the Bill of Rights in its entirety. We think that all of the protections enumerated in the Bill of Rights are important to protect and to safeguard and to put our name behind. At the end of the day, an organization with limited resources, we have to choose priorities and programs. I don't have the money or the resources of the staff to do everything on a broad set of issues. And so the Second Amendment has been an area where we have watched what developments have happened in Congress. We have obviously had collaborations with, like, the Gun Owners of America, who joined us recently on our statement on security and civil liberties. But it's been one where we feel that there is good work already being done, and we're monitoring into the future. But thanks for your question.
So Jay, though, has touched a soft spot, though, insofar as on issues like property rights, on issues of the right to bear arms, the people who you would have joined the ACLU from the other side of the political spectrum say, frankly, Anthony, you're not working very hard on those issues. Why should we bother?
Well, it's a question where many individuals, even current ACLU members, raise that question of me. When you have an agenda as broad as defending the rights of everybody, everybody's rights and all rights, that's an enormous landscape. That's an enormous bulwark. And at the end of the day, my job is to help try to shape some priorities and programs to try to make the most effective work that we can, given the limited resources. I still stand by the fact that we are very clear about making sure that the entire Bill of Rights is of concern to us.
So what are you saying to Jay? That you support the work of the NRA, that people should be allowed to have as many handguns, as many automatic weapons as they want?
Well, we've been looking at this more in the context of, for instance, cigarettes and other approaches at regulating.
Okay, but on the guns thing.
But that's what I'm saying. Our approach is that if government can come up with some good efforts to regulate the arms, the use of arms or firearms generally, that would be an appropriate way to make sure you balance the public interest and public safety with also the right to bear arms.
But it's a restriction on the Second Amendment, isn't it?
But it isn't a place where we've spent a lot of energy. And if you can show that regulating it doesn't restrict someone's access to it,
right. Then
we're fine with that.
1-800-423-8255. We're going to Mike calling in from Cambridge. Hi, Mike.
Hi, how are you?
Thanks for calling.
Sure. I was very interested to hear the beginning of the program in particular because my grandfather was arrested in 1919 in the Palmer Red Scare as an immigrant. And it was, of course, that was the founding of the ACLU was related to or directly grew from the concern over that mistreatment of immigrants. And I'd been a member of the ACLU and had dropped out about 10 years ago and rejoined in the aftermath of September 11th because of my concern that, indeed, we have a mini version of the Pomeroy scare going on right now. I do think that this is an opportunity for the ACLU to reestablish itself as being as dealing with issues of significant importance in the United States. I think that to some extent the ACLU lost that when civil liberties became more firmly entrenched over the intervening decades, and we have certainly taken a step back now. I would say that in listening to
Mike, can I ask you a question? When you quit the ACLU because you thought they were involved in frivolous sort of things, what sort of things were annoying you then?
Well, I think some of the one of the callers earlier mentioned, taking down a sign that says "In God We Trust" in a public school or something of that sort. I recognize the principle of that it's important to separate church and state, and I don't believe in prayer in the public schools. But on the other hand, there are some kinds of expressions that have almost transcended religion and almost become secular in their it sounds like an odd thing to say, perhaps, about an expression of faith in God. But they become a part of the broad culture that transcends religion specifically. And it seems to me like the ACLU is off fighting little things like that rather than having a key and compelling set of issues to focus on.
So you're saying to Anthony, stay the course that you're on right now?
Yes, and the other comment that I would make is in his discussion about Anthony's discussion about becoming more involved with issues overseas. There's an awful lot to occupy the ACLU right here and right now, and I would urge you to focus on that.
I agree with you entirely on both points. I mean, first, let me tell you that I share your frustration about how the ACLU is perceived. I think this is a gap between the perception and the reality. I'm very frustrated at times, and Dick, you're going to have to excuse me because I think you're a terrific journalist and I think you do among the best work in your field. But there are members of the media that will cover small instances of policy or discussion and blow it out of the water, make you believe that this is a core priority for the ACLU when in fact it isn't. And so some of my core priorities, some of my top issues where I have tens of lawyers on the case, or I have spent millions of dollars on developing a doctrine or an area of law, those issues don't get covered in the newspapers. And yet one little letter that one very junior staff attorney, well-intentioned but somewhat misguided, sends a letter to a school board, and that becomes a cause celeb for me when I actually have 20 people working in security and civil liberties out of my New York office. I got another 20 people in Washington, and that work doesn't get covered. It's enormously frustrating.
But you know you're in the spotlight. You know that people will look at everything that comes from the ACLU.
And we have become the favorite whipping boy of very often conservative talk show hosts and of conservative media outlets. And they do a very good job, I think, of misportraying or mischaracterizing the work we do. In terms of internationally, I have no intention to work on any place else other than the United States. That's in my charter. That's my mission. I care about civil liberties in the U.S. I also think that the ACLU has been a beacon for the broader international human rights movement, where organizations have modeled themselves on us. And there's a way for us to talk about the global spotlight in helping shed attention on what our government is doing at home. So if we talk about globalization in the context of the economy and using a global marketplace, what I want to begin to use is a global bully pulpit to hold my government's feet to the fire on what they're doing and what they're not doing at home. I care about folks here, not in Rwanda or anywhere else.
Mike, did you want back in?
First of all, that last comment is very helpful. I appreciate that. And I would also suggest to you that to the extent you can, you get yourself invited on to some of the more to some of the more rational conservative talk shows. I am a registered Republican and have been since 1964. I don't know how many of your callers are today, but I am. And I think there's a substantial body of people in the middle of the political spectrum who need to know more, and perhaps even people over to the right side of the political spectrum who would respond to an effort, particularly at a time like this, to explain your positions.
I agree. My best friend is a Republican. He's been my best friend for the last 6 years.
Careful with those.
I know, but it's true.
It is, though, the religious right which the ACLU has alienated and continues to alienate. And that's a large part of the American public, based on whether you say it's a letter from a junior staffer or the history of the ACLU in working that separation between school and state. And that's got to be a concern of yours.
It is a concern. And I think very often they use it to their advantage merely to raise money or to portray a boogeyman that they need to be up against. I think at the end of the day, if you allowed me to sit down with the American public in their living room, explain to them my mission of being an organization that defends the civil liberties and civil rights of everyone. And if I was able to show them 81 years worth of work, where I get to show them that I have defended with equal vigor the rights of everyone in this country, from the Nazis all the way to the NAACP. And the thing that brings them all together are the core values. And that those values are ones that we hold dear. And that's what I see at stake. I was stunned, Dick, when the Attorney General got in front of the Senate Judiciary Committee and said that anyone who criticizes the government, quote, gives ammunition to our enemies and paws to our friends. That is an astonishing comment coming from the Attorney General. This is a democracy. This is a democracy where the individual not only has the rights, but has responsibilities. We have the responsibility to pay taxes. We have the responsibility to be on a jury. We have a responsibility to volunteer for military service. And we have a responsibility to openly and vociferously disagree with our government. And when the Attorney General says that, oh, anyone who's criticizing the government is against us, that he has to be reminded that democracy is a great many things, but it is not a quiet business.
Except that in reaction to that, there wasn't a groundswell of, Mr. Ashcroft, what are you saying? And that speaks to the sort of uphill battle that's ahead for you folks.
Yes, some of your very own senators, Dick, were very quiet, nodding their heads.
I'll speak to them. I'll deal with that.
Okay.
Anthony Romero.
I'll help you.
He's the executive director of the American Civil Liberties Union. Connection listeners, we're talking about the change in the priorities brought to the American Civil Liberties Union by the events of September 11th, but also in broader terms, the image of the ACLU as it exists. What does it mean to you? Is it the organization that does best represent the rights of this country on your behalf, or are there problems that you want to talk with the executive director about? 1-800-423-8255. My name's Dick Gordon. This is The Connection from NPR. You're listening to The Connection on National Public Radio. My name's Dick Gordon. My guest, the executive director of the ACLU, Anthony Romero, and our telephone number is 1-800-423-8255 if you'd like to join our conversation. Anthony, you said a little while ago that if you had a chance to sit in the living rooms of Americans and explain to them specifically what your organization was or could do, that you'd be able to get rid of some of these perceptions. So put yourself in John Ashcroft's living room. Look across the coffee table at the Attorney General and tell him he's not a patriot. Tell him that you're the most patriotic organization and he's wrong. How do you make that argument?
Well, I think we begin by reminding him about the importance of debate, what I was just saying before about the importance of dissent, that when the American public criticizes him, he should thank them. He should be grateful that they're engaging in this set of issues because it's too important to leave to the hands of just a couple of individuals. So when I get criticism to my office, I thank them. I actually read the letters. I respond to them. I come on shows like this one because I think it's essential that people hear from me that I'm engaging them on their issues. The other point I would make with the Attorney General, and we're about to do a square off on a series of op-eds. He's writing one side, I'm writing the other, and it will run, I think, in one of the policemen's magazines. I'll send you a copy.
Good.
I would talk also about the need for ensuring checks and balances. That when, even as he asked for all of these sweeping powers that he has now gotten with the USA Patriot Act, and that he's now been able to promulgate through rules and regulations, piercing the attorney-client conversation, being able to establish military tribunals, being able to detain individuals in immigration for extended periods of time, that one of the things he should be also championing for is for to ensure that the courts serve as an effective check and imbalance on his power, because that will give him greater legitimacy.
When all that legislation was going through Congress, your organization was putting out news releases. You were expressing profound disappointment, in another one, bitter disappointment, in another one, deep disappointment. And people were saying, we know you're disappointed, do something.
Well, we are doing something about it. We were lobbying behind the scenes at that point. We were trying to find members of Congress, individuals of goodwill, and find their staffers to give them the arguments and the analysis they would need to make these points. At the end of the day, it was a train that no one could stop. And it just steamrolled right over the American political system. That, in fact, it was passed at record time. And no one stopped to take and ask the most threshold of questions, which we should have had, which was, how did September 11th evade our government? What are the prodigious powers that the government already possesses? And why did those powers fail to identify the terrorist threat? When we know what's broken, then we can figure out how to fix it. But we didn't ask those core questions.
So do you have to get those issues into court to deal with them properly? I mean, that's in many ways where organizations like the ACLU have done the best work. Roe versus Wade, the Howard Levy case, flag burning issues. Those are only settled in court, not in you know, a blizzard of press releases in Washington.
Yeah, we work on three fronts. We for sure work on the legal side. And we are exploring certain cases right now that will be filed in the next couple of weeks or months that will take up some of these core issues. Litigation is a very methodical and painstaking process. You cull through facts, you cull through the clients, you study the law, you analyze where you can make good law, where you can file such cases. It doesn't happen overnight. And so that's the process that all of my fantastic colleagues in the legal department are sorting through right now. And there's more to come. We filed already a Freedom of Information Act lawsuit, but we have a number of lawsuits which are in the pike, which I can talk to you more about into the future.
Okay, our number is 1-800-423-8255. I want to get to some callers. Matt's joining us from Raleigh, North Carolina. Matt.
Yes, good afternoon.
Thanks for calling.
I have a quick question regarding the definition that you used earlier of a terrorist act or the act of terrorism. And I think it's very important to define our definition of an American. What is an American when we were protecting them? Is it those that are citizens who have inalienable rights, or are they just people who are here either legally or illegally?
Well, Matt, yours is a good question. And I begin with the premise that the American Civil Liberties Union is here to defend the civil liberties and civil rights of everyone in our country. And in fact, that's what the Founding Fathers said when they drafted the Bill of Rights and the Constitution. In the Fifth Amendment, they talk about the due process of persons. And they were very clear because the language in that document varies from different amendment to amendment. And yet the Fifth Amendment is very clear that all persons are entitled to due process under the law. And that's a long-held view of our legal system.
Go ahead, Matt.
And while we are protecting these people, these are the same people at this point who are potentially causing harm to our country, not saying that the Americans who live here and the citizens are not doing harm, but isn't that kind of a bizarre stance to have when we've had an act like the September 11th attack, when we have had the attack in 1994 from Timothy McVeigh on the Murrah building, things of that nature make sense to protect. And while our government is not infallible, I would think that the American Civil Liberties Union would push for more protections of preventing people, things like the international IDs, the universal ID card, things of that nature, to protect the citizens that are here.
Are you saying, Matt, that it is could go so far as to be unpatriotic for the ACLU to look after the interests of people who have some questionable status in the country?
I that's exactly what I'm saying, and I think that there is a right that the American citizens are potentially losing because our government is spending so much time on people who should not be in the country in the first place.
Anthony.
Yeah, I mean, I would begin with agreeing with Matt on one point, which is that we should demand the government take all the necessary steps to fully and completely prosecute the individuals responsible for September 11th. We should throw everything we have at them. We should make sure that we hold those people responsible, and we should make sure that government does everything possible to ensure that another attack doesn't happen. I live in New York. I've watched it. I walk by it every day on my way to the office. My office is six blocks away from Ground Zero. So I agree with Matt on that point. However, we want to make sure that as government does everything it can to ensure that this never happens again, that it not be used as an excuse to allow for government to do what it likes. And that's where we have to talk about this balancing between security and civil liberties. And we have to make sure that the two are not put on a collision course, because if we get one at the cost of the other, we won't have much.
Matt, thanks for your call. Our number is 1-800-423-8255 to Charleston, South Carolina. Roger's joining us. Hi. Hi, Roger. Are you there?
Yes, Matt. Yes. How are you doing?
Good. Go ahead, please.
Good. I had a couple of points. And the one I originally started with was that it's become somewhat difficult in the last several months to the ACLU, I guess, has allowed themselves to be somewhat marginalized, or there's a perception that they've been marginalized and that they've drifted away from their core values. And however, this conversation's been very reassuring. I've enjoyed it greatly.
Be specific, Rogers. What are you saying that they've drifted away from those values? What have you seen?
What happens is I've had an increasingly difficult time explaining to people why the defense of civil liberties is not just the defense of specific print things, that we're looking at an overall gamut. We're trying to protect the Constitution, that if in a time of crisis when the chips are down, that's the time when standing up and saying that every person has inalienable rights is at its most important. And I don't think that the ACLU has done an extremely good job of conveying that across the broad public, or to the broad public.
Anthony?
Well, I appreciate Roger's criticism, and I'm going to take that very much to heart. I've been also frustrated by the perceptions and the understanding of what we stand for and what we don't. And that's why this is one of my top priorities, coming on shows like this where I can talk directly to people. I've been on the road in about 12 cities in the last 11 weeks trying to get the word out there that, in fact, we are an organization that's very much concerned with the security and safety of our people, as we are concerned about the freedom and liberty of all of us.
So, Rogers, tell me something. When you make the case, as you say you do, to friends saying this is a really key time to protect our, what are your friends saying to argue with you? What's the strongest part of their argument?
Well, the strongest part of their argument is semi-irrational fear is always difficult to argue with. And now, I am the token liberal in a construction company that I am about probably the only person that would support the ACLU. Everybody else seems to be the absolute opposite. But they argue that the security of the country outweighs individual liberties, and that is, it's very easy to make that argument, and it's difficult to refute it and unless you have a lot of time. I would say that the one-on-one with Mr. Ashcroft is an excellent idea, and I will, before you get off the program, if you mention which journal that's going to be in, I'd like to read those pieces. But we've drifted away. We're not getting the message out that our principles are all we have. It's like, you know, I do business. I'm a tile contractor, and I don't use contracts. I don't use contracts because it's a small business, and I believe in that if you can't do business on a handshake, well, then it's not such a. It's probably not going to work anyway. But that's a principle, and we're. I've lost my.
No, it's okay, Rogers, because I'll thank you for the picture that you gave me, because I wanted to hear Anthony speak about, you know, this image of one man in a construction company in South Carolina arguing against all his colleagues, because in effect, Anthony, that's the position that you're in right now.
You bet. And we have many members of the ACLU which write me and tell me that they're in very similar situations, Roger. And I just want to tell you, when I come to Charleston, I want to come and we'll go to your workplace. And at least there'll be two of us with your colleagues, and I promise you.
Absolutely, absolutely. I look forward to it.
Let me at him,
Roger.
I think we can convince him.
I'll send you a letter and a cup. I'll drop you a note, and I look forward to seeing you if you make it down here.
Sounds great.
But thank you. Thank you. I don't know. I actually don't know because I don't listen to it. But do you go on shows like Rush Limbaugh or some of the other even more off the deep end individuals and go head on head with them?
We do. We do. But we want to make sure that we pick the place where we can talk about the issues. I don't want to turn this into, you know, worldwide wrestling. This is not I don't want to be in there for people's viewing pleasure. This is these are serious issues about our democracy. And if we can have a reasoned debate, even when you get hot under the collar, I'm delighted to do it. But I want to make sure we can get the issues out there. So we've been picking the places where we've been bringing our messages.
Rogers, thanks very much for
your
call.
Thank you very much. One last thing. What was it Jefferson said about in a democracy, no citizen can abrogate his responsibilities?
That's right.
Yeah. Thanks a lot, and keep up the work.
You know, the word that has come up a couple of times in the conversation, which must be the one that keeps you awake at night, is fear. Because when you go back to the internment of Japanese Americans, Anthony, you go back to the Palmer raids and even the Chicago police sweeps, where people say, we don't want the ACLU, it's because they're afraid and they don't think that the protection of those rights is really worthwhile under the circumstance. It seems like that's the case today.
That's right. And we have to start by acknowledging that fear, Dick. It's a fear that my staff and I, we feel it ourselves. My staff had to be evacuated in the middle of that morning on September 11th, walking through a firestorm of debris and of dust and of fear and of concern for their family members and their friends and their loved ones who were six blocks away under that rubble. And they're civil libertarians. And they came back to work the next week with that same fear and that concern, but that dogged determination that what really makes this country great are our core values and our core liberties.
But you've got some very tough cases ahead of you.
We do. But we've got nothing else to do but to do the work. And I firmly believe, just like when we look back on the Japanese-American internment, and even though there was enormous fear at that moment and enormous anxiety, and we now look back with that shameful chapter in our history and we say, how could we have done that as a country? And I look back and I say that the American Civil Liberties Union was one of the only organizations in the country who had the courage to stand up and to say that it was wrong, that I'm willing to bet my money with history, and that history will prove that once again we're on the right side of the equation.
But the history has also been unkind to you. I mean, there have been instances where people have said, no, you're wrong.
But I'm not running a popularity contest, and I'm not in a beauty contest. So I'm here to do the work I have to do and to do everything I can for this country that I very much love and hold dear.
Thanks so much for joining us.
My pleasure.
Anthony Romero is Executive Director of the American Civil Liberties Union. Connection listeners, if you've thoughts about the program, share them with us on our website at theconnection.org. We had help putting our program today from Darren Manoogian, Tim Monroe, Brian Myers, and Carl Volker. Our program is produced by Sean Carberry, Sarah Field, Kelly Jones, Allison McAdam, Lindsay Miller, Tara Murphy, Christina Rousseau, and Doug Sugars. Our senior producer is Graham Smith. I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Connection.